get my shoes and out the door. 5, I'm alive. 6, 7, 8, feeling great.
Hello, BYWG Podcast Tribe. This is Dr. Noah. For the month of November, we are featuring an awesome book of the month and an incredible course, or should I say masterclass. As a reminder, all the links for the book and the course of the month will be listed in the show notes in iTunes, in our weekly newsletter, and on our website at www.beyondyourwildestgenes.com at the Listen Now tab. Our book of the month is Estrogeneration, How Estrogenics Are Making You Fat, Sick, and Infertile by Anthony G.J., Ph.D. Tribe, I highly suggest you pick up this book and read it. Our course of the month is the Keto Masterclass, a 45-day program to kickstart your keto lifestyle created by our friend and author of The Paleo Solution and Wired to Eat, Rob Wolf. For a short time, this course is offered at an incredibly low rate of $49. The link for this course will be in all our monthly materials. In the podcast archives at the Listen Now tab on our website at www.beyondyourwildestgenes.com, you can listen to Dr. Mike interview Rob on March 11th, 2017, and most recently on October 15th, 2018. Enjoy the upcoming podcast. Hello and welcome back to Beyond Your Wildest Genes podcast. My name is Dr. Noah DeCoyer and I'm your co-host. I am excited to introduce my long-term friend and fellow chiropractor, Dr. David Moore, to the podcast as a first-time guest. Dave, I saw you started up a new podcast. I don't know if I saw it on Facebook somewhere, and the whole concept intrigued me so much that I wanted to have you on. So let me run through your bio and we'll get started. Does that sound good?
Very cool.
All right. So 14 years ago, Dr. Dave was at his lowest point of his life. He felt hopeless and alone after years of alcoholism, depression, and even contemplating suicide. Dr. Dave focused on one goal, to be a good dad to his 10-month-old son. That single desire transformed his life. Today, he's a father of three, husband of 17 years, and a practicing chiropractor for 20 years. Now, 14 years later, not only has his life been transformed, but he has helped thousands of dads do the same. Dr. Dave shares his experience, strength, and hope with dads, showing how to align your values and identifying the character required to become a good dad can transform your life into becoming a better man. Good dads become better men. Quote from Dr. Dave himself. How are you, my friend?
Wow, it sounds like it's going to be a good show.
Listen, I'm putting you on the spot. I expect it to be a good show. So here's my first question after that powerful bio. Dave, we've been friends for probably close to 10 years, fellow chiropractors. You're an author and most recently a brandy new podcast. But how about a little backstory, set the scene for the audience?
Yeah, so so the bio you just read has a lot to do with the new project that we created called the Good Dads Club. So thanks for reading that, although it doesn't paint the most wonderful picture, which I think this is the theme of this particular interview today, because we could talk about life today, and we're about to talk about a successful practice for 20 years and three wonderful kids and, living in Bergen County, New Jersey, a beautiful home. I mean, my life is beyond its wildest dreams. Practice is fantastic as far as that's concerned. In chiropractic, which I grew up in chiropractic, I've been practicing for 20 years and a lot of aligning the values. And if you're a doctor or a chiropractor or anybody out there that realizes if you have got a goal in life, it's a lot of hard work and you have to align your values to get there. And, depending where you started to where you end up, it tells your journey. But I have a wonderful life today. So the thing is this, over this particular past summer, I decided to create a project. I wanted to do something different. I wanted to do something where I can serve more people. So I started to just really think about what are the things that are most important to me in life. And like I said, chiropractic 20 years, and I actually wrote a book in chiropractic. I've traveled the country and I've met thousands of them. So this interview, a little weird because there's probably people out there that if they met me and you've known me in practice in life, you think of me in one particular way, which is probably the image or the avatar I've been able to create over time. But you might not understand, where I come from. And I think the reason I came on this call today is to talk a little bit about that, because I think if you are out there and you're looking to change, or you're not happy where you are in life, or you feel hopeless, or you feel depressed, or you feel like there's just really no way out, that maybe you'll be able to identify to my story. It's not like I want to just hop out there and tell everybody about all my problems, but if people can learn from it and then realize that at the end of the day, it could be an incredibly victorious story and journey, then don't be afraid to share it. So life today is fantastic. Practice is awesome. Started a project because I wanted to be able to reach out to people just like me, dads like me. Guys don't ask for directions. They don't ask for help. So in this past summer in particular, as I thought about what would be most important, there was two in particular stories in the news. One of which, we probably all remember it, but there was a guy who, Chris Watts, he murdered his wife and kids in Colorado and like trying to bury them under some tanks somewhere. And that's like, that's a guy just losing his stuff, you know, like that's a guy who just lost his mind. And how does someone get to that? And then there's Richard Russell, who's the guy who, I don't remember this one, the guy who stole the, he worked for at the airport, he stole the plane, flew it around a while and crashed it into and committed suicide by hitting a mountain. And if you heard the story and you listen to the guy talking to on the radio before he did it, he sounded like a regular guy. No, like a guy you and I would hang out with, right? So you wonder like what drives people to that place. And I'm going to tell you, there was a point in my life where I contemplated it. And I just want to be able to share that story with people today and then also give people resources to be able to reach out to people. That's why we created the Good Dads Club. It's a free group on Facebook, and it's a great resource. It's a phenomenal project, and I'll tell you more about that towards the end and the things that are going on in there. But ask away unless you want me to just start from the beginning of my story.
Yeah, you know, and first let me say thank you for being so vulnerable, because there are so many people, particularly guys, you know, the macho guy who's so afraid to be vulnerable. And I know right now you are raring up to be as vulnerable as you possibly can be.
Yeah. And I'll just reinforce that for that one more time. I just think that, first of all, you get to a point in life from a 3-year, I'm 47 years old, you know, so what people think is not as big of a concern. But the reality is, you know, I think being able to identify to a story. So I think I've been most of my career, most of my life, I've been running away from a story. And I think if anything, I'm finally embracing it to start another chapter in my life instead of running away from something, just being or actually running towards, you know, what I want to do in life. So that's really the gist of it. So, you know, starting my story, I'm from Clifton, New Jersey. I'm an athlete my whole life, played sports. One of the things that I've learned over the past 30 years is that when I drink alcohol, it's different in my body. And the reason I bring that up is because there's people out there who might be able to identify to what I'm saying. There's a small percentage of people, maybe it's 10%, that when alcohol goes in their body, it's a different experience than other people. And if you're one of those people, you know what I'm saying. And if you're one of the 90%, you don't know what I'm saying, right? So you have no idea what that feels like. As a matter of fact, I have no idea what it's like when you put alcohol in your body, what it feels like. But if you're not an alcoholic or you don't have alcoholic tendencies, then I absolutely, trust me, it's different, okay? And it's been shown that there's a different physiological effect in the body with people that have this going on. So here I was. I had my first drink when I was 10 years old. So my brother, oldest brother, showed me the liquor cabinet, and 10 years old, it was, hey, try this. And I drank that, and it was like, whoa, what's this? You know, and just so you know, it lights up my body, right? So it was cool. It was something that I knew that was a pause button possibly in life, or stuff got stressful. I could always, you know, do that. And life was not too stressful at 10. I don't remember, you know, it wasn't like a drop down drunk. I don't think maybe I didn't even touch it for another year or even remember that it happened. There wasn't a whole lot of things going on in my life at that point. But later on, thinking about putting that into my body in an undeveloped brain, understanding that there's a physiological reaction in my body that's different than other people, and it's called craving. So what happens in my body once I put that in my body is I want more of it. You know, it's a craving. It's unsatiable. It's like you want more, you want more, you want more. And you either, through willpower, don't have any more, or you just let it happen and all kinds of crazy stuff happens, right? And I didn't know that was the way it would react in my body till later on in life as it started to see a pattern, right? So the other thing about alcohol is that people that do have that in their body, there's also a mental aspect of it where they think that maybe next time it'll be different. And that's called the obsession, really obsessing over the possibility of it being different. So that you see that a lot. And I think it's a theme that's important. I'm so happy to know that. You know, I'm so happy to know that in my life, because it was a, it became a big issue, and it became a really tore me down over time. But so like I said, I grew up as an athlete, played football. And if you ask me, you know, my senior year, junior year of high school, what I was going to do in the future was going to play more football, drink more beer, hang out with my buddies, and then, you know, hang out with my girlfriends. You know, that was my life at that time. It was a great life. I'm not, it was great, right? And what happened in my senior year playing football as a linebacker, and I had fractured my neck and dislocated my shoulder. One big injury basically sidelined me from playing sports and at least playing football. And it changed the direction in which I was going to go. Like, I was going to a different college now. I was not going to go to where I was going to go for football. And now I had to really look at things differently. So I continued to go on to college. I just didn't do the football part. I continued the drinking beer, hanging out with my friends, and dating girls. Right? That was like the only priority that I even had in life. I didn't look beyond it. And within 2 years of that, I was a lifeguard down in Seaside Heights, New Jersey, which is you know, Jersey Shore fame, you know, sure. Schnooky and the rest. Here I am on the lifeguard stand on Samson Avenue. I'm a lifeguard. It's like I'm living a B movie. You know, it's Party City. And I got busted. Me and the guys in our house, we got busted with a pound of marijuana in our shore house. And, man, like, talk about going from the, you know, home athlete and family. Everybody thought of me as this athletic person. And then all of a sudden, this comes out, you know, I get arrested. And it's not, you know, obviously, in retrospect, that's the worst thing in the world. But at the time, to a 17-year-old kid who just didn't really have any direction in life, a criminal record really wasn't, you know, working for me, you know, at that point. It was, I started to really feel shameful and guilty. And my parents, you know, it just was, it was a public thing. I was a pretty popular kid in our town, you know, my brothers and I. So all of a sudden, I was in this place, and I was, you know, in a bad, bad place. And what happened at that point in my life, I left college, I went home. I was living at home, and my mom was working for a chiropractor, Dr. Ken Walose, and kind of sorting life out here and not really knowing what I was going to do. Pretty hopeless, you know, pretty much thinking that who would hire me, who, you know, where would I go, what would I do next? And so what happens is I go get an adjustment, and I'm on the table, and Dr. Willows turns to me and he goes, you know, you make a great chiropractor. And I'm looking at him like, are you kidding me? Well, chiropractor, you know, I got a criminal record. I, you know, I'm a mess. You know, what are you talking about? And he looks at me and he knew my story. You know, my mom worked, you know, he worked, my mom worked for him. He totally knew my story. And he goes, you could do anything you want to, as long as you put your mind to it. And like, of course, everybody's heard that a million times, but that moment on that table, that day, it was like the first time I ever heard it. And I'm a strong-willed person. So all you need to do is give me one reason why I can, and I'm going to figure it out, right? So, and then he delivers a chiropractic adjustment, which I think is incredibly significant. Because at a very, very important moment in my life, where I was given a vision of what could be, which almost seemed impossible, and then the adjustment was given, something happened magic that day. And I started a course in my life to figure out how I can become a chiropractor, because it aligned with my values. I was always into health and fitness and nutrition, and chiropractic was helping me. And I obviously had major injuries, and he was really helping me. So so that's a very pivotal point in my life. And I like to say that that was it. And then everything took off after that. But, you know, you got a lot of years of maladjusting to life and problems and issues and, you know, drinking on top of it. And, you know, I learned and went to chiropractic school, and I studied my butt off, and I fell into a groove of, you know, study all night. And then I would just, alcohol put me to sleep. You know, that was kind of the way I would do it. It was like coffee and studying. And it was, you know, that I was a drop down alcoholic, but I used alcohol as a tool to go to sleep or to, for stress or whatever it might be. So it always was still there as a theme. So when I graduated chiropractic school, I was not really ready and adapted for society for the most part. I was a heavy drinker, and I didn't do it all the time. I did it maybe once or twice a week, but when I did it, I would find myself drinking to excess. I always would say I never got in trouble every time I drank, but I certainly every time I got in trouble, I was drinking. You know, so I found myself in a very tough place. So we can kind of pause there if you want to ask any questions before I move on, but it's a we could stop right there as now that I'm a chiropractor.
Yeah, you know, I don't, I've listened to the story a few times before, and like I mentioned before, I love the vulnerability of it. I think it takes a lot of courage, and as a chiropractor, personally, I like how you connect one of the most defining moments of your life with that chiropractic adjustment. And I could do the same, and I'm not here to tell my story, but I can link some of the most important or two of the most important parts of my life with a chiropractic adjustment as well. I don't know if you want to elaborate any more on that. You don't have to, but that seems to be very important to me and to you.
No, I do actually, because if there are chiropractors out there or chiropractic patients out there, I don't want you ever to underestimate the power of an adjustment, especially when there's focused intention, not only from the chiropractor, but from the patient. So that's a moment that, and then what that adjustment literally tattooed that thought into my nervous system. So as a chiropractor, when you're adjusting someone, what are the thoughts in your mind? And then as a patient, when you're getting adjusted, what are the thoughts in your mind? And as a chiropractor, make sure you create the environment where those thoughts are constructive and they're positive. Make sure that any negativity is out of there, because that is could be one of the most powerful moments in somebody's life. So, yeah, cool. Thanks for picking up on that. I think that is an important moment, and that we all need to notice that the power of the adjustment is so much more than just something mechanical, and even something more than just neurological. It could be spiritual. It affects all dimensions of life.
Yeah. So continue with the story, man.
Yeah, man. So I'm a mess, right? Hang with me. It gets better, right? So I'm out of school here, and I'm just floundering around. And just the thing is this: I'm starting my practice. The stress of the practice, and really my routine was this: I was smart enough not to go out and drink at bars. I would just, you know, I would binge drink when I was stressed, which was quite a bit at this point. Live with my parents, trying to start a practice. And my family started to notice there's a problem here. You know, this cycle is not good. How I'm living my life, which is all in on chiropractic and my business and my practice on one end. But, you know, I would have this contradiction. And Patchen Temple talks, he's a great mentor of mine, when he talks about Ayn Rand and contradictions lead to destruction. And the degree of destruction is directly related to the degree of contradiction. So here I was thinking, here I was focusing and doing all my energy and doing the great thing in my business. So what's the big deal when I want to let us steam? Who am I hurting? But here you have a contradiction to a lifestyle. And really, I had never really evaluated values at that point. I just didn't think that one thing would even possibly affect the other. So I meet my wife and my fiance, and we're dating, and she's another one now. I'm getting more attention on my this alcohol thing. You know, when I drink, it ain't right, right? So, and she's giving me a little pressure. My family's giving me a little pressure, and I decided to start to try to do something about it. And the reality is, I would get my stuff together for about three months, but you know, then something would happen. And I would, you know, get loaded, you know, or something would happen. It could be during a day or something, like on a day off, but it was like, you know, like my wife, like, what are you doing? Like, what is the matter with you? And I started to think there was something the matter with me, like that I never was going to be able to get beyond this problem in this situation. So fast forward, we get married and we have a baby. And my son, this is now going back 14 years ago, and my son is born. And here's another pivotal moment in our life. And Noah, you're on my podcast. We talked about that moment. But, you know, for me, when that happened, when my son was born, I it was validation for me that God still loved me. Like, here's this gift. Like, you know, because with all of the things that had happened in my life and all of the shame that I felt, right? And it's you just put that upon yourself, right? I just felt so guilty and shameful and like a bad person in life. And then all of a sudden you're given the most beautiful gift in the world. And for me, it was like, that's God saying, you know what? I still love you. And for me, that was huge. That was huge. And I really thought that now I would probably be able to change my life. And about 10 months later, that was not true. 10 months later, I just, you know, had one of those days where it was a day off and I, you know, thought I could kind of sneak it. And before you know it, you get sneak drunk, by the way. Your wife comes home from work, you're just drunk, right? But it was the last straw, you know, the reality of it was. And this was the deepest of it all, because she was done. My wife was done with the routine. She basically told me she was going to leave next time it happened, and here it was, taking my son with him, you know, pretty much outing me to our family because she kept it all pretty much a secret, all my little slip-ups, and I'm at the bottom of my rope. You know, I'm thinking, like, life's over. And I'm really thinking more along the lines, because this, when I say I contemplated suicide, the thought was this: how good am I to these people? Like, how, like, what is this kid, you know, in life? How is it going to be good that he's got this father that's a screw up? You know, how, like, what is the whole point of this? Aren't they better off without me? And that's really was the thought that was in my mind. And I remember this night, like, it was like, it's like a movie. I had gone to an AA meeting with my buddy, Billy, and I left his house and I'm driving by a ball field. It's the springtime and it's baseball season. And I see a dad, and the game's over and people are dispersing, driving away. And I see a dad in the back of an SUV with his son having a snow cone. It's like slow motion, like a movie. And I was like, man, that's heaven. Like, that's, if I know that, that's the furthest thing from me, wherever I can get. I was like looking through like bars that I can never get to the place where I'd be so peaceful and serene and with my son and happy and having a moment like that because I'm a screw up. And it was that, really that moment that was so pivotal for me. And that was probably the biggest, because I realized at that point that what do I have to do to become that guy? Like, what is the values of that guy? What is his character? What does he do on a daily basis that gets him to be able to do that, as opposed to what the heck I was doing? And that hit me hard. And I say this because if you are in a place where you feel hopeless or you feel lost or you don't think it's ever going to happen, you're literally contemplating something extreme. Think about what it is, who you want to be or where you want to go, and then identify what are the characteristics of that person to become that person. What are the values that are required? Is this someone who just like drinks to excess? Probably not. You know, like, well, there you go. Let's get it. So it was really for me, and I would never put this on a kid, and I don't put this on a kid, that the children are the reason why I got my act together. But it certainly was the pivotal point for me. You got to do the work yourself, but as far as I'm concerned, it certainly was a nice carrot to have some sort of focus and direction into my life. So fast forward, you know, 5 years from that point, my son's in T-ball and I'm the commissioner of T-ball in Glen Rock, right? So I'm like overly involved. It's like, the idea is like life changed at that moment when I realized that being a better dad was the character and the value to be a better dad is what really made me become the better, I call it the better dude, or the better man, right? Better dads become better dudes. So what it took for me to align who I needed to be a better father was exactly what I needed to do to straighten my life out. And I wouldn't have done it for myself. I wouldn't have done it for my wife. You know, she's a peer basically, right? But you know what, when these children come into your life, for me anyway, there's a part in my heart that says I'm responsible for that child. And it was the one thing that made me feel complete. And for that reason, you know, 14 years later, I've started the Good Dads Club, and we'll talk a little bit about what goes on in that club and what it's all about in a moment. But you know, that's kind of my story. I was really trying to really identify with that, in which has really driven me to where I am today, which is, you know, aligning my character and values to be a father, as well as, you know, be a good chiropractor. We could talk about the mentors and the people and the dads that I know in chiropractic that have changed my life and have really, they probably don't even realize the impact they've had on my family because of it. So,
yeah. So here, let's go. I got three random questions, and you mentioned this already, essentially, and so did I. When I read this out loud to you, what do you think? Good dads become better men.
Yeah. So that's exactly it. If people have said the quote, good men equal good dads, but I flip it around because I found for myself, there's a point in men's lives, dad's lives, I would say, or if you're a parent, that you're no longer focusing on yourself. You're not focusing on your midbrain. You're not focusing on, you know, feeding your pleasure. It's not a selfish thing anymore. You actually, you know, tap into that part of your brain that is that loving place in your life, that space in your heart for your children. And if you could if you can work from that place and then identify the values and character to be the man that you need to be to be a good dad, then it'll literally change your life. And I even take it one further because of the group. And we have, you know, over 30,000 people on our fan page for the podcast. We've got people downloading that all over the world. We've currently, and it's only been 8 weeks, it's gone viral. We have over 1,000 dads in our closed group. And the idea is this. The world's polarizing. You know, Facebook is polarizing. You know, politics is polarizing, right? Everybody's fighting all the time, especially on Facebook. So I thought this would be brilliant. What if we had something that wasn't polarizing? What if we identified to the one thing that all it seems to be all dads have, even that a part of their heart, regardless of their politics, regardless of their religion, regardless of their views of reality, right? There's this place in their heart where it's love for their children. You know, I mean, even like the evil dad in the movies loves his evil kid. Right. So if we could start there, you know, what impact could we have on the world if men, you know, put aside their differences and talked about that common place and that common drive and that common job, which most of us identify as the most important job in our life. And then we come together to help each other be better dads. And that's kind of the whole idea of the group. So better dads equal better men and or better dads equal better dudes, which is more my language, but.
that's the Northern New Jersey language. who are your role models in dadhood?
Role models, well, my father. My father's a real humble, you know, guy. His mother died when he was in high school in a car accident with his younger brother. His younger brother's name was Les, so my last name's Moore, Les Moore, which is I wonder that I never met my grandma or grandfather, but I'm sure they had some humor. My grandfather died before that of stomach cancer. So my father never had a father. So he joined the Navy. He was Washington State, met my mom. And so the next mentor I had was my grandfather. He lived two doors over my whole life. Rosario Carabello, Italian, New Jersey. We had a wonderful big Italian family, but we never knew the people from my dad's side. So those are my family. I got two brothers that are great dads. I got my older brother's got three kids. So we're constantly with family. And that's been great. In chiropractic, I would even say some of my mentors in chiropractic are great dads. Pat Gentempo, I mentioned before, is a great father, lives a lifestyle that, you know, it's all about his kids and his family. And Eric Plasker has been my greatest mentor in chiropractic the whole entire time. Great dad, you know, great, great dad. And just so as I'm learning, was learning how to be a chiropractor, I was also learning how to balance that and be a good father at the same time. And bringing a vitalistic approach to the whole thing has been fantastic too. So, you know, so many men, you know, the guys in my practice, men in my practice who are, you know, 1 year, like you said, you mentioned Mike is a couple of years older than you, dad's in our practice and just, hey, what are you guys doing this weekend? Or what are you doing? This comes up. So I've been interviewing dads the whole time, ever since I became a dad. I'm a research guy, right? I will figure it out. Like you said, I will figure it out and then I'll write a book on it, a blog on it. I'll write a ebook on it. So that's the energy that I bring to something. I'd like to find out everything I possibly can and then share it with other guys so we have the content and help that's out there.
I agree with all your dad choices chiropractically and your personal ones of course. And you know, when you interviewed me
before I go any further, so Jeff Slocum, fantastic dad and chiropractic. These are guys that I wouldn't want to not mention.
Okay.
Steve Hoffman.
Sure.
I mean, just over the years, just like, there's so many out there. I don't want to just say a couple names without forgetting them. I'll get a lot of trouble.
Yeah. No. Listen. Go ahead. You can anyone pops in your head during our rest of our conversation, just shout out a name. Cool. We're all good. When I was on your podcast, which was just – well, it's not released yet, but we just recorded it like 30 minutes ago. We talked quite a bit about values, aligning your values, identifying character traits. How about elaborating on that? Because I was pretty open in saying that is one of my biggest challenges as a father, is placing my values on my kids as opposed to allowing them to develop their own values.
That's great. You know, I spent the last greater part of the last 4 years working with Patch and Tempo with the Philosophy Formula.
Yep.
And I stayed on as one of their helping people go through the process. I run a mastermind group with that. So purpose is finding your purpose statement. And really being clear on your values and who you are and what you do. And it's really what's driven me to get even start this project. So for me, we talk about, and Pat talks about this finding your Miles Davis. And what he means by that, and I don't want to get too deep into the story, but if you think about, you know, there's always, if you had to write a purpose statement, you know, most chiropractors go to the internet and look at other people's purpose statement and see which one they like the best and modify it. And, you know, that's what we do because we're so busy and OCD. But if you really think about, you know, who you are from an artistic perspective and in disconnect from the, you know, the trust and all the whatever values that are out there, but almost create your own and find out who you are as a person. So through a lot of time in thinking about this, I found that my highest order values were connecting. It's interesting because no one even calls the landline usually. Actually, hold on. All right.
There we go.
They won't call back. So connection is an important. So connection is a big thing. Connecting with people. I think that there's an urgent problem in our world where people are disconnected, you know, and they feel hopeless and they feel alone. So I've always had that value where I love to connect to people. I love, whether it be a podcast in my office, whether it be on stage, whatever it is, writing a book, connecting with people where they are is a high order value for me. I love to connect to people. And then the second thing is leadership. And that was a difficult thing for me to swallow, a difficult word, especially, you know, because I, obviously having some self-esteem issues from my past, you know, working through getting to the point where realizing that I am a leader and understanding what leadership really was and squashing the ego out of the word lego. The word problem for me was leader meant in charge or almost like having an ego or like, you know, being pumped up or something like that. That was the image that would come to my mind. And then someone just pointed out, and I'm Christian, doesn't matter, but you know, Jesus, whether you're a Christian or not, was a pretty good leader. You know, he motivated and moved and still moves, you know, millions and millions of people, right? But think of him as a leader. What he was the greatest servant. He was washing feet. He gave the ultimate sacrifice. He was nailed to a cross. So, like, mm-hmm. you know, not many people signing up for that. My point is, like, that is also leadership, and leadership is service for me. And then the last thing is to inspire, you know, and I hope in this conversation I wasn't too long-winded or self-serving in any way, but and I pray that it wasn't. But the reality is I just really want people to be inspired. You know, if you can change where you are right now and realize that there's hope, whether it be in your health, whether it be through chiropractic, whether it be through anything, whether it be if you're having problems with in relationships or with alcohol or drugs, that, you know, wherever you are, you don't have to be. And there's people out there, if you reach out for help, the hard thing is people they keep it inside. And I think that's the hardest part. So I don't mind opening up to these days publicly, talking about a story. I see it as leadership. The first time I said it on a podcast, which is my podcast, and I released it, I had a Jerry Maguire moment. I was like, oh, crap. It's out there. You know, like, it's out there. And what's going to happen? Was that a mistake? You know, so, so scary. And I have to tell you, it's been nothing but a rewarding experience for me, because at this point, I'm able to not run away from a negative story, literally live in the victory. And for the first time, make decisions and motivations, do things motivated by a positive lifestyle and living in a place where I'm at today, as opposed to running away from, technically running away from not becoming a loser. You know, that was always my motivation for the last, you know, 20 something years since that arrest.
I hear you on that one. Great, 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 great answers. Now, you mentioned all of it, but how about codifying it just a little bit? How do people find out more? And the stuff will be in the show notes, but how do people find out more about you, your podcast? If they're in northern New Jersey, how do your chiropractic practice, how do people find you?
Great. So the best way to get us, anybody can go to Facebook. It is called the Good Dads Club Podcast fan page, and anybody can like that page. If you do, that's where I drop the podcast on Tuesday. We just a website called thegooddadsclub.com. We'll also have the podcast, as well as that's where I'll be I'm starting to write some blog posts based on the interaction of the men inside our closed group. So if you're a man or a woman, no problem, fan page, or a dad, not dad, no problem, great. Love to give that content out to you guys. And then we have a closed accountability group on Facebook. It's free, but it's called the Good Dads Club. We have over 1,000 members as of now after 8 weeks, and it's dads that are going in there. And like I said, you have 1,000 dads in your pocket right now. So if you are a dad and you want to be part of a group, don't be a lone wolf. Don't do it by yourself. Come into the group. There's a lot of fun conversations in there, but there's really from the very beginning been some very serious shares and some very serious we've tackled some very cool topics already, especially the first one that came up in particular was on work-life balance. I ended up writing an ebook that gets released this week too. So basically what I'm able to do, like you are, like we're into this research, I'm actually getting content in through the conversations from the men in the group, and then I'm taking the most important topics and I'm getting some research, going out and finding out what's been done, and then creating an article and post and just having conversations on those things. So that's been really kind of cool, and it's taken a life of its own, because I started the group thinking as a chiropractor I'd be talking much more about health and things of that nature. But what's really happened is the need for men to have a place to go where they're comfortable to share this their concerns and have these conversations has been much more important. So the group itself is creating its own life of its own, and I'm just moderating it. I'm a ball doing it. And it's been great. So if you're a dad out there, find us. Get into the Good Dads Club closed group. We'd love to have you in there. And I guess that's it for now. The website should be live by the time this thing gets dropped as well. So come join our community.
Yes, I will be joining the private group later on today or first thing tomorrow morning. So I'm excited about that for sure. One last question, Dave, a question I've asked for the last year, at least to all the guests that I interview. What is your routine from waking to sleep?
I'm like a cyborg, man. Like I do the same thing every day. So I wake up about 5:15, no alarm, just roll out of bed and downstairs, get a little, start to stretch out, do my little personal business, and I get to the gym by 6 a.m. I'm a CrossFit athlete, so we get nuts for about an hour with some great guys. Work out with some one of my workout partners is a Army Ranger, one is a FBI, one is SWAT. These guys are our age, grumpy old men, aches and pains, but we get our body moving and we get going in the morning. And my two pastors also work out with me in the morning, so we have a great group of men in the morning working out, and girls too. They're there too, but we tend to be the staple of it all. And then I'm home by 7. I'm home. I'm putting a coffee on. I'm kissing the kids, hanging out with them for about 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and then I'm upstairs, shower, out the door by 8, in the office by 8:30. See patients all day, new patients, and we do our routine from about 8:30 to around 7 o'clock at night, and where I come home. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I'm home, dinner, hang out with the family. And crash, watch some whatever my wife is watching, HGTV, Kardashians, whatever's going on, and just kind of connect with her there. So that's kind of a regular day for me. Thursdays are my day off, which I get to do these cool interviews with dads and do shows like this, which is a lot of fun for me as well. But that's pretty much my routine. It's fitness. It's we eat real well in our house. It's we're chiropractic. I'm sure you could identify. You don't do soda and sugar. And that's pretty much our lifestyle.
Very good. Well, thank you so much. I'm glad I picked up on your viral podcast and your viral Facebook page, and I'm glad that you came on, and I'm glad that you extended the offer for me to allow to go onto your show as well. So thank you very much, Dr. Dave.
Okay, buddy. It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Great. My name is Dr. Noah DeCoyer, your co-host, and you're listening to the Beyond Your Wildest Genes podcast. If you like what you've heard today, please share this to your friends and family and encourage them to subscribe on iTunes. Better yet, if you've enjoyed the podcast, please give us a 5-star rating. It helps more people hear the information. You can sign up for our incredible weekly email at www.beyondyourwildestgenes.com. Thank you. And as my oldest son Hayden says, be awesome and never unawesome.